You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. I don't recall exactly how old I was when I found my first Mad magazine, but I remember going through it page by page, looking at illustrations packed with characters, laughing at the spoofs of movies and TV shows, and wondering about all the people behind all that work. That's why my inner teenager can't wait to see the exhibition, What Me Worry? The Art and Humor of Mad Magazine, on view starting November 21st at the Cincinnati Art Museum. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss the exhibition and the impact of Mad Magazine are artist and satirical illustrator Steve Brodner, a co-curator of the exhibition, and Emily Agricola Holtrup, curator of the Mad exhibit at the Cincinnati Art Museum. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Great pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, I'm so glad to talk to you. Steve, tell us about the early Mad Magazine.
Well, Mad Magazine started out as a comic book. By some pretty brilliant people. And it just evolved over time from a brilliant evocation of comics that took flights of fancy against popular culture. Superman became Super Duperman, things like that. I'm sure there are a lot of listeners of a certain age who remember these things. But in the 1950s, as you know, there was a backlash by the right in the United States against comics that were not deemed wholesome. In order to keep publishing, Mad evolved into a magazine which did feel much more like an adult publication. And in fact, it never lost a kind of adult, knowing, winking relationship with kids. And to me, that was the strongest part about Mad, was the idea that I would be engaging with this publication by grown-ups about grown-up things. There was nothing infantile about the subject matter. It was all about news and popular culture, movies, television, all that. And I learned about culture. I learned about American culture from Mad Magazine. And it turned me into a satiric artist myself. But it evolved because of the political dimensions of the 1950s.
Some people might know, even if they don't know a lot about Mad, they might know about Alfred E. Newman. Can you tell us where he came from? And who is he?
This was an image that had been floating around the culture since the 1880s. That face of Alfred E. Newman, and if anybody doesn't have a picture that pops into their mind when they hear the name, think of the iconic cover for Mad of a gap-toothed kid smiling idiotically at the camera with large flappy ears on either side, sort of head shaped like a football. And he started out, the earliest example of this in the show is an ad, I believe, from the 1880s for a painless dentist. So here's this kid smiling like, you know, I went to the dentist and it didn't hurt. And so it came from advertising. It came from all kinds of different cultural connections. Culture is really amazing in that it says, take a little, leave a little. And things have a way of evolving and finding meanings and then changing meanings. And that's an example of that. So when you go to the show, you'll be able to see maybe 25 different gradual evolutionary stages of Alfred E. Newman until somebody at Mad decided this would be great to put on the cover. It became the kind of the trademark for the publication. And he had to be drawn a certain way. The great cover artist, Norman Mingo, did Alfred exactly the same. And anybody who wanted to try it needed to know what those exact proportions and dimensions were, because he never changes.
Emily, I know you've been working on this exhibit and said it's almost 250 pieces that are part of it. Can you talk about the evolving Alfred E. Newman? Do you see a lot of differences in him over time?
Yeah, I mean, I've laughed with folks that I feel like I'm seeing Alfred in my dreams at this point, because I've been looking at his visage for the better part of 6 to 9 months. you know, the early drawings is he's got a little bit of a slimmer face. He looks actually a little bit more adult in the earlier drawings. And then his face fills out, gets a little bit chubbier, not chubby, but, you know, you can see that he just becomes more almost three-dimensional in the later drawings that we're still seeing today. So it evolves with time like what you would imagine it would. So, yeah.
Well, Emily, Steve also mentioned that MAD evolved because of the political conventions in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Will we see that reflected in this exhibit at the Cincinnati Art Museum, that evolution? And if so, how?
Most definitely. The first few sections are really kind of a visual timeline of, I would say, the first few decades of MAD. So you'll see that and what was humorous and what was being poked fun at those times of history, you'll definitely see. But then there's also some works that are very timely for today as far as political statements. But those who have been around a minute or two are going to go, oh, yeah, and really understand some things. Maybe our younger audiences might have to have a few things explained to them. But yeah, you will definitely see, you know, there's a picture, I think, of Michael Dukakis and George Bush Sr. And, you know, today's generation might not know who Michael Dukakis is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I learned about politics. I learned about the positions of candidates from just a satiric piece where somebody would invent rhymes or songs or parodies of songs that would explain politics. And then the drawings would be by Jack Davis and Mort Drucker and all mm-hmm. these people. I could not wait for MAD to arrive every month because there was no place else where I was getting this. And it was very much a balm, a great aid in negotiating a complicated culture and being able to not only knock it down to size with satire, which is what satire is great at, but also to understand who these people are.
Yeah.
And you could now start to investigate them, look them up, and it may help me become a very devoted reader of news. MAD was my first newspaper, really.
Steve, these artists are clearly so talented. Why did they call themselves the usual gang of idiots?
I don't know. Because everything was idiotic. Everything was stupid. Everything was, you know, self-deprecating. There was a need always in MAD to puncture pomposity and high-flown posturing. And so they did it to everyone else. They did it to themselves.
Steve, why did the publisher Bill Gaines refuse to accept advertising, and how did MAD make money without advertising?
That's a really good question. Anybody else would have taken ads. But mm-hmm. Gaines saw this as something very precious and something that needed to be preserved in its, I don't know, for lack of another word, purity. He treated all these artists and all these writers as family. He, you know, took care of everybody. He made sure they were paid enough. It was a different world. You know, there isn't anything comparable to this today when hard-nosed business decisions are either made or the people who won't make them will be fired by a board or a conglomerate or some entity that owns them. This was a time when at least certain places could remain independent and kept sort of as a family. He was a wonderful fellow, Bill Gaines. They had, I don't know, at one point, 1.5 million or something, subscriptions, and then a tremendous amount of newsstand sales. I never subscribed because, you know, I was a kid and I didn't subscribe to anything. But I would know when the magazines were coming to the, and I'm a New Yorker. I grew up in Brooklyn, and we had candy stores. And these were places with large walls of magazines and comics. And you could just drool over these things all evening, all afternoon. Next to that would be a counter where people would order egg creams and have a pretzel or get a bacon and eggs. And you can get all the newspapers there. There were a lot of newspapers when I was a kid in New York. And, yeah, candy. So these were like magical places. And I knew when the candy store had the new MAD magazine, and I definitely was there on that day. There was nothing like it anywhere else And because we felt they were telling us the truth, you know? We kids felt that this was a place where adults were going to level with us and say, come on, kids, in spite of what they tell you, we know it's a lot of nonsense. We know they're lying. They're lying to you. All those ads, they're lying to you. All these TV shows are stupid. Don't buy the con, saying to the kids.
Yeah.
When people are honest with you, you're so grateful to them, you know? And I felt that way about every, and I got to meet Mort Drucker. I got to know a little bit Al Jaffe. And I got to actually work for MAD myself later on when I got more established as an illustrator and cartoonist.
Yeah. We're talking in this recorded interview about MAD Magazine and an exhibit called What? Me Worry? The Art and Humor of MAD Magazine on view at the Cincinnati Art Museum starting November 21st. Emily, how was MAD ahead of its time, and how do you think the magazine continues to comment on contemporary issues?
Well, I think it's definitely, like, you know, Steve said, it was teaching kids to have a critical eye at what was happening in the world. And that's very ahead of time, especially when it came out in the 1950s. And for the last seven decades, that still continues to challenge what we will accept. And it encourages people to challenge, kids to challenge, and not believe everything that you see or you hear. And that teaching through humor and through satire can be a wonderful way to engage with people. And it's not so serious. It teaches us just to be a tad bit cynical with things that we may see. So I think that that's kind of what makes it timeless and what continues to make it so relevant to today and why it has had such diehard fans for so long and such a wide range of diehard fans for so long, because it, you know, speaks truth to power. I think that that is sorely missing perhaps today. And I would love to see humor be used a bit more to teach really and to discuss and really engage with some of the harder topics that we're dealing with in this world.
Steve, I mean, MAD was even anti-smoking way earlier than a lot of places, right? I mean, it was ahead of its time on a lot of issues like that.
It was not afraid to tell the truth about smoking. You know, everybody knew that it caused cancer and it killed you. But at that time, all you saw were these ads on television for cigarettes. There was a guy named the Marlboro Man.
Oh, yeah.
You ever see video of this? The man is on a horse, and it has the music from the Magnificent Seven, and he's charging up a mountain. And, I mean, there's nothing more masculine than this. This guy with a big jaw, and he's smoking away. And turns out later on, that fellow, that very fellow, died of lung cancer. You can't keep something that's true, that's actually disastrous to people's lives, secret forever. And MAD was right on top of that, mm-hmm. and everything else that was hypocritical about American culture and advertising and Madison Avenue. And they were relentless. And, you know, there's more of a need for it now than there was even then, I think.
I couldn't agree more.
Emily, why do you think MAD Magazine belongs in a museum? I mean, we were chatting before we started this conversation, and you said you weren't sure you would ever see, like, the action figures and things necessarily in the museum.
You know, I think that it belongs in the museum because it's art. And, you know, the Cincinnati Art Museum has been around since 1886, and it's our responsibility to show art of all kinds and get people to understand that art is everywhere. You're wearing art every single day. And so to show this work at the museum just brings that home even more, that this is art. These are very talented artists. If you look at, you know, Mort Drucker and what how he was capturing actors in his spoofs, you know exactly who that is. That takes so much talent to be able to do caricatures like that. If you look at, as you're walking through, yes, they're caricatures, but you know exactly who those people are. And people weren't posing for them, you know? So, you know, I think it's really, illustration is an art form that we all can really understand because we see it all the time in ads and in cartoons and all around us. And I don't think that up until now, we've really looked deeply at that as an art form. But our kids and our teenagers are doing illustrations and they're drawing manga. And so it is something that really resonates with them. So I think as the community's art museum, we need to be showing all different kinds of art.
Steve, do you think the cartoons and illustrations and Mad should be taken more seriously as art by the folks looking at it?
I'm not sure I understand the question. What I'm, you know, aside from enjoying the point of an article, how more seriously do any of these need to be taken? The spirit in which they were done was in the spirit of graphic communication of a point, of a story. And that's what illustration really is. If you take an illustration out of that and you put it on in a frame on a wall, and you can maintain the context of that, which this show does, then it highlights it, but it doesn't make it a more serious art. It just draws a bright line under it and says, dig this, look at how beautifully done this concept is, words and pictures. But to take something out of context and put it on a wall and say, here's art, kid, look at this art, I don't know if that respects it because more than it would be in publication, because it was meant for publication. And so unless you want to be, you know, Roy Lichtenstein, take an illustration and make it, you know, 20 feet high and turn it into something else, that it's no longer its original thing. It's now something else, which is fine. I think the greatest function of the things that you will have at this wonderful show is when people come and see it and they get a big charge out of the point being made, that it tells them something about history, it tells us something about culture, and it tells us something about the times we're living in right now. Because these same issues just keep replicating themselves. You'll see on the walls Nixon and Barry Goldwater and Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy and Joseph McCarthy and, you know, all these characters, they seem to vanish, but they do come back. You can find, if you tried hard enough, a McCarthy corollary in American life today. If you try hard enough, you can see a JFK corollary. In fact, his grandson just announced for Congress in New York. So it's about then, but it's also about now. This has tremendous value. Treating it like a great master painting doesn't make it better. What helps us appreciate it is to understand that it's illustration, it's part of a satiric publication, and to really investigate just what that is. And that's, I think that's as serious as the mad guys wanted to be.
Fair enough. Well, Steve, I know you worked with the Norman Rockwell Museum to create this fantastic exhibition. What do you think Mad Magazine and Norman Rockwell have in common?
Visual communications, the world of print, and Norman Rockwell was a darn funny illustrator. If you just delve into him a little bit and study his life and his work, you will see a person with tremendous humorous gifts. Most of his covers for the Saturday Evening Post were funny on some level. There was always some little joke. And even if it was a sentimental piece, there was a surprise to it. And there was a kind of love of the characters he painted. And it didn't take him very much trouble at all to exaggerate them a little bit and make them endearingly funny. And he poked fun at these folks and at life in general. Some of his illustrations are just flat out funny. There is a moment when Mad approached Norman Rockwell, and in the show, I think you'll have in Cincinnati, a letter that Norman Rockwell wrote to Mad declining the offer to redesign Alfred E. Newman. And he actually entertained it for a while until his wife said, Norman, this is not a good idea. Don't try this. And it really was not going to go anywhere, because Newman is fixed and Norman Rockwell is not going to improve it. Norman Rockwell did his thing. In fact, in the show, one of the highlights is the famous triple portrait of Rockwell, where he paints himself from behind doing a portrait looking in the mirror. And Richard Williams shows off his tremendous painting chops by, and I hope you, in your show, it's side by side also.
Oh, definitely.
where his cover for Mad parodies that and has Alfred E. Newman as Rockwell in the seat painting his triple portrait, except we see Alfred E. Newman from behind, and the painting on the canvas is also from behind. So it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, we unpacked those two paintings yesterday, and I was very excited to see the Norman Rockwell and the one that we've gotten very used to seeing and hung up next to each other. It's just going to be such a wonderful opportunity for our visitors.
Yeah.
It's a hoot. It's absolutely a killer because he's so good, Williams. These guys could do anything at MAD. And it was a thrill. We did this last year in Stockbridge. It was a great thrill to do this and to meet everybody. And it was one of the great experiences of my life.
Well, I've been talking with artist and satirical illustrator Steve Brodner, a co-curator of the exhibition, and Emily Agricola-Holtrup, curator of the MAD exhibit at the Cincinnati Art Museum. Thank you both so much for your time today. The exhibition What Me Worry? The Art and Humor of MAD Magazine is on view from November 21st through March 1st of 2026 at the Cincinnati Art Museum. You can find a link with more details at wvxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.